name is Jason, and I'm going to be interviewing my grandfather, John, about his time in the military. So, how important was the military to you when you were growing up?
Yeah, the military was very important to me, Jason, as I was growing up, because my formative years were the years of the Second World War. So there was a great emphasis in the nation at that time about the armed forces and the men and women who served in the armed forces. I actually had an uncle who was in the Navy, and I was greatly influenced by the stories that he had to tell and seeing him in his uniform.
Okay, so what field of the military did you actually end up going into, and why did you go into that one?
I went into the Air Force, and I went into the Air Force because I am always interested in flying. I was also always interested in airplanes, and I thought that would be a very natural fit for me.
And you also went to medical school, so did you, were you involved in any of that type of things when you were in the military?
Well, I went into the military as a flight surgeon with the first fighter wing stationed in the Selfridge Air Force Base. First fighter wing was the fighter pilots, and I was the flight surgeon and general medical officer responsible for the care of the pilots, the navigators, and their dependents. And that was my role in the 3.5 years that I was in the Air Force.
Okay. So what was the hardest part, or one of the hardest parts for you about being in the military?
I think the hardest part for me as a professional person was they asked me to do a number of things that I really had not been prepared to do. They asked me to be a flight surgeon, but they did that because they needed a flight surgeon and they needed one immediately. Ordinarily, to be a flight surgeon, there is a 6 weeks training period, and but they didn't have time to send me to that training mission, so I had to learn to be a flight surgeon by hook and crook and communicating with other flight surgeons at different Air Force bases. They asked me also to be the base orthopedic surgeon when the orthopedic surgeon that was there became ill and could no longer serve. So it was challenging to assume these roles for which I had no real training, but I was called upon to as a matter of necessity, and it was a growth of my personal ability as a physician and as a person to find these challenges and not only perform them, but perform them satisfactorily, that I left the service with very positive reviews from my commanding officers.
So on these next two questions, you can elaborate as much as you want to. Did you face any racial discrimination in your time serving in the military?
Well, racial discrimination is for African Americans has been a fact of life ever since we were brought to these shores. So yes, I did have various incidents of racial discrimination while I was in the service. I have to say that due to the efforts of General Dwight Eisenhower and then President Dwight Eisenhower, great strides were made to make the services more equitable for anyone who was in the armed forces, regardless of race or creed or color. And actually, there was less prejudice, there was less discrimination in the Air Force and in the armed forces in general than there was in general life outside the armed forces. I did experience it. I found that there were many social activities that took place among the officers on the base that the the elite officers, the lead officers, invited the subordinate officers to, that my wife and I were not invited to them. But then I also have to say that outside of the social aspect, where there was some elements of discrimination, some elements of prejudice, in my dealings with the pilots, with the navigators, with the enlisted people, and their wives and offspring, I was treated with a great deal of respect, and my wife and I developed many lifelong friendships among our fellow lieutenants and captains that we served with. So the armed forces were somewhat better than life in general as far as the African-American and discrimination and segregation was concerned, but it certainly wasn't perfect.
So what was it like when you retired from the military and went back to your everyday life and people weren't so accepting of your race?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Jason. I'm not surprised that you asked that because you have a great aptitude for being discerning. You know, if people knew you as a person, life for African Americans in the 50s and 60s wasn't all that bad. You would always find some people who would treat you with respect. But people who did not know you could be rude to even threatening. While your grandmother and I were in the service, I decided that wanted to become an ophthalmologist. I wanted to become an eye surgeon. And I applied to various places. And interestingly, I applied to Indiana University and was turned down for their ophthalmology residency, their ophthalmology training program, their eye surgery training program. They had never had an African-American in the program. It was many years in the future before they would ever have one. I was accepted to a medical school in St. Louis, Missouri. I'd been to St. Louis, and St. Louis was really an extremely prejudiced city, and I did not want to go there. I was also accepted, as you know, into a program in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I had always heard that Milwaukee and Wisconsin in general were very free of the most obvious aspects of racism than we'd find even in northern Indiana where I grew up. So your Aunt Lisa was a baby at that time, and I would we'd get in our car and we would drive up to Milwaukee, and we'd find that we couldn't find a place to stay because you come into Milwaukee on the south side of the city, and on the south side of Milwaukee at that time, no African Americans were allowed to live there. They wouldn't sell you a home. They wouldn't rent you a home. It's very difficult, but we didn't know that. So we would stop at motels on the south side of the city, and they would the vacancy sign would be up. And but when we would walk in, they'd say there was no room for us. And this happened time and time again with a young infant. And finally, we found one place that would rent us a room, but they had small cottages away from the main building, and they would put us there. We went to Howard Johnson's, which is a restaurant chain that was very prevalent at that time in the early 60s, and ate and thought everything was okay. And when we walked out, we were surrounded by a number of maybe 15 to 20 young white guys, and they called us niggers and they threatened us, and I think the only reason why I wasn't beaten was because they because my wife and my young daughter were there. Now, this happened to someone who was an active duty military person. It may be that if I had been in uniform, they would have treated me differently, but I don't think that that's true, because I know that African-American military people who were in the Second World War on active duty and would come home on leave from actual combat would be lynched because they were thought to be uppity. So that was just the way of the world. The United States was schizophrenic. There were people who just would treat you with great revulsion, whether you were in the North, whether you were in the South, or other people who would treat you with great respect and dislike you because they didn't like you, but not because they didn't like your color. And you never knew from moment to moment who you were going to run into. You could go in a store and pay for something, and they would smile at you, but they wouldn't put your change. If you gave them a bill, they wouldn't put your change in your hand. They would drop it on the counter because they didn't want to touch you. There's all kinds of extremes. So it was a challenging time. It was a difficult time. But it was also a character-building time for African-Americans, because it left us with a great deal of determination to prove ourselves and to ask for equality if we couldn't get it by asking, to demand it. And when we moved into Milwaukee, your grandmother and I were active in the civil rights movement to integrate the schools in Milwaukee, the civil rights movement to open the all areas of the city for housing for African Americans and other minorities, because Hispanics were moving in at that time also, and also in employment. We wanted to make sure that happened. So it was very challenging, but often out of challenging, character has the opportunity to be developed. And there were a lot of very strong men and very strong women who came out of the 60s in the civil rights movement. And it was a very pivotal time in American history, as I'm sure you know from your reading. Sorry to take so long.
No, it's okay. You can elaborate as much as you want. So considering everything that happened after, would you consider your service in the military as worth it?
Yes. I really believe that America is really a great country. And there are many deficits to the country. But overall, I still believe it is the greatest country in the world. I think that it wasn't ordained that, but I think that we have a good democracy. And I think that over the period of time, the United States has shown how people of goodwill can come together to try to make it true that all men are created equal, but not just European men, but men from any country, and women. You know, they say men in the preamble, but it's for women also. And over a period of time, we've seen things improve for African Americans. We've seen things improve for other minorities. We've seen things improve for immigrants. We've seen things improve for women. We've seen things improve for individuals who are have sexual orientations that were not accepted for many, many years. So it is a great country, but with great benefits comes great responsibilities. And I think that all of us have the responsibility to serve the country in one way or another. And I think that you can do things for the homeless. You can do things for the people in need. I think you can do things for the Peace Corps. I think you can also do something for the country by becoming a member of the armed forces. And that is dispiriting to me, to see people who will stand and get misty-eyed and accuse other people of not being patriotic when they themselves have never done one thing, not one thing in their life, to show their appreciation for the benefits they have of living in this country. I think that serving the military is one of them. One in maybe 20 or maybe 25 people actually serve in the military, but you can also do it by serving in the Peace Corps. There's many different ways to serve this great country of ours, but it's sad that so few people give it lip service, but they don't make the service from their heart or a commitment or a sacrifice of a couple of years away from their ambitions and so forth. So, you know, that's my take on that.
So, given the fact that you served in the military, what do you think of people disrespecting the national anthem now, like with the NFL and taking a knee?
Well, if you're speaking about the athletes like John Carlos in the Olympics, you know, who stood on the podium and raised their right fist, I don't think that's disrespecting the anthem at all. And as far as Colin Kaepernick and the other athletes in the NFL who don't stand for the national anthem, I don't see a problem with that either, because actually they don't sit, but they kneel, and they make a deliberate aspect to kneel during the national anthem. Then they kneel as a respect for the people who serve in the armed forces. The American flag is held in great respect, and there are many rules and regulations in regards to the American flag that have to be followed. It also turns out that if the American flag is flown upside down, that's not a sign of disrespect. It's not a sign of desecration. It's a sign of individuals in distress and they need help. And it's just that way with the national anthem also. I think that when people are in distress and they have a community in need, it's perfectly okay to not stand for the national anthem, but to kneel or to make some other motion that is in relevance to a community in distress. And that's all that kneeling means. It's not, it doesn't disturb anything. It doesn't stop anything. It's not disruptive of anything. But it shows that there is a problem here, and there is an opportunity and a venue to make people aware that there are people who are in distress. And when African-American males in particular are being lynched, you know, by people in general or by rogue police officers, then we have to do something about it. And this is not throwing bricks. It's not setting buildings on fire. But it's a sign like the American flag being flown upside down that there is a need out here. Let's address it. And if we won't address it on their own, let's call attention to it and get some attention that way. So I have no problem with that. I have problem with the people who sit in the stands and say that this is terrible, this disrespect for the people who defend the country, when they themselves were not patriotic enough to actually be a part of a contribution to the country. From my standpoint, they don't get they have no right to object.
Okay, so that was all my questions. Thank you so much for taking part in it.
Well, you know what, Jason? Next week, I expect you to call me again, and we'll just talk without being recorded. Now, I'm really delighted to have the opportunity to spend some time with you. I must admit that you have been very good very lately about communicating to Nana and I, and we do appreciate it. We, so I told you earlier, we care about family, but it has to be a two-way street. And so we can offer ourselves and our feelings and our wishes to you, but it doesn't become communication until we get something, message, whether no matter how short and so forth, in return. And we were delighted that you took the time to communicate with us while you're overseas. Take the delighted that you will communicate with us from time to time. Very much appreciate that. So we love you. We're happy to be a part of your lives, and we'd like for you to be a part of ours forever. So anyway, happy to have the opportunity to talk to you and perhaps contribute to you a little bit.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. Tell everybody we said hello.